welcome to the podcast. I am Melissa Matheson, and May is Foster Care Awareness Month. So we're doing something kind of special with the podcast. We are dedicating this month to the topic of foster care. Now again, just a quick apology for the audio quality as we've had to record all these May conversations over the phone rather than in person at my kitchen table. So far this month, we've talked to my friend Abby Phillips, who is a single foster mom in Ohio, who has not only spent the last 6 years fostering, but along the journey has also adopted. Then last week on episode 78, we talked with Forrest and Karen, who started their foster care journey 15 years ago and are currently raising 11 children. They have a beautifully blended family of children they've birthed, adopted, and currently fostering, all doing life together. And this week, you guys, this one is really special to me. I'm talking with Ben and Tara, who got a phone call from a family member 9 months ago about a surprise cousin who was born in another part of the state and placed in foster care. At the same time, 9 months ago, I got a phone call from our local DHR about a newborn in the NICU needing a temporary home. This is a story that is near to my heart, and I had all the tissues ready for this one. And hey, even if foster care isn't your thing, I want to invite you to take this journey with us this month. You never know when you just might get a phone call like Ben and Tara, or suddenly find yourself in a situation where foster care inadvertently becomes a part of your story. So grab your coffee and join us. We're talking about gas station coffee, baby fever, and divine connections today on What's Next, God?
So Tara, you switched to French press because you kept breaking your carafe on your coffee maker.
Yes. So I got a stainless steel French press so that I couldn't break it. But it's actually better. It keeps it because it's double insulated. It makes it stay hot for a long time.
So you guys live in a big city compared to where I live in a small town. Do you prefer the coffee at home, or are you still hitting coffee shops in town?
I'm cheap, so I like my own coffee just fine.
It's just a practical thing. I mean, if I need to meet somebody out, you know, for breakfast or, you know, to talk, then I'll go to a couple of different coffee places that I like, but I'm not a coffee snob.
Okay.
I'm good with the gas station coffee too.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's just it's to an end. It's the difference, but Tara doesn't usually drink my gas station coffees when we're in between Birmingham and Hamilton.
Man, that hurt my heart a little bit.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I love your family. If I can just start with that, I think you have one of the most incredible young families I've ever met in my life. I just absolutely adore all of your children. Give us your family. Tell me a little bit about who you are and about your family. You guys have been married how long?
14 years.
Yeah, this year's 15, but we're not there yet.
Yeah.
It likes to jump ahead. Our anniversary is in December. But
mathematically, it's a lot easier just to go by the year. But Tara doesn't like that.
Where did you guys, y'all met and y'all meet in college?
We did. Yep.
Yeah. And where did you go to school?
We went to the University of Mobile. I graduated from there, and Ben only went for 3 semesters before he transferred back to where he's from in Montgomery. But we were just friends all through college. And then right after college, he helped me get a job in Montgomery where he was living. And then we started dating pretty soon after I moved.
So Ben, when you helped her get this job in Montgomery, did you have any ulterior motives in that?
I mean, a little bit, but I was okay either way. But I knew that she really wanted to teach in a classical school, and there was a brand new opportunity to do that. And so I was thinking of her first.
Yes. Oh, okay. And then yourself second.
She did get the job. So, yeah.
She did get the job, and you did get the girl. And now, Ben, you're... Go ahead, Tara.
I was just going to say, because we were friends for 4 years before we started dating, the dating and engagement was very short. We started dating in July, got engaged in September, and got married in December of that year. So it was it was really fast, but we already knew each other's character, and it was just a good time.
We didn't know each other's families very well, and so it was probably kind of a surprise to them.
Yeah.
We're pretty quick, but it wasn't really a surprise to our friends.
Yeah.
Right.
How old were you guys when you got married? Can I ask that?
Yeah, I was 23, and Tara turned 23 the same day we got married.
Okay, so you weren't too young, because that is a kind of a whirlwind courtship when you're like 18, 19, 20.
Right.
But, yeah, no, 23 is good. So, Ben, you're a lawyer, aren't you?
I am.
What kind of law do you do?
Sure. I do civil litigation of all different sorts, it seems like. Some people kind of have a niche practice where they only handle certain types of disputes, but I've kind of done a lot of different kinds, both plaintiff side and more typically the defense side, construction cases, employment disputes, personal injuries. I've done a little bit of family law lately.
What made you want to get into law?
I was young and idealistic at the time. I was an English major in college, and I like words and ideas, and there's a lot of that in law practice and law school, and so it just seems like a better fit professionally for me to do something to support my family. I knew I wasn't going to go to medical school or something, or be an engineer, or
I think his dream was, maybe still is, to teach, but that doesn't support a family.
Yeah,
and we knew we wanted a lot of children, so
it was kind of a practical decision, to be able to support a family. And then also, I thought in my imagination that I would, be Atticus Finch or something, but I'm not really.
And Tara, you went to school to be a teacher as well?
Actually, no. I studied theology in school and got a theology degree. So it's not very it's not a very marketable degree, I guess. But I just wanted to study what I loved, and I loved the Word and Jesus. And I didn't want to, I don't know, maybe this is weird, but I didn't want to lock myself into a career. I didn't feel a calling into any particular career. And I didn't want to just do something just to have a degree of something that I wasn't sure I wanted to use forever. And
right.
I knew that I wanted to be married and be a mama, and I knew I wanted to stay home with babies when they were little. And but when I finished school, I visited a classical school when I was in college, and I was like, this is how I want to spend my time before, Lord willing, I get married and have children of my own. I would love to teach at a classical Christian school. And and you don't have to have a teaching degree to do that, because they do things so differently than normal schools. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So when you got that first teaching job that Ben helped you with, how long after that did you guys start dating?
Well,
right at the same time, right?
Yeah. I moved to Montgomery on June 10th, and we started dating on July.
In July.
Yes. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
So we have had started our large family.
We have four biological children, and we have almost legal custody of one more, who is my first cousin, actually.
Do you think there'll be more babies after five, or is five good for you guys?
Well, four was good for us.
Okay.
I made him promise me when we got engaged, like before I said yes, that he would be okay with five children. And he said yes. So I said yes.
I was an only child. And so I was very much into my children having a big family and siblings.
Yeah. So he wanted that too.
What about you, Tara? Did you have a lot of brothers and sisters?
I just have one brother, but the principal that I went to work for when I moved to Montgomery right after college had 10 children and I loved her family so much. Like I just loved just that there's so much fun when there's a lot of children. So,
yeah, because when you said you guys wanted to have a large family and I knew already how many kids you had, I didn't know if four was large to you because the family I talked to last week on the podcast had 11 children.
Right.
So
it's like in our mind, our first city was Montgomery and housing is extremely affordable there. And we moved to Birmingham 6 years ago. This year and housing is not affordable here. And so by comparison, you know what I mean? The largeness of your family kind of goes with the territory of what kind of house you can put them in.
Sure.
Yeah.
So tell me kids age. Mary's how old?
Mary's 12 turning 13 in a few months.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's so mature. I thought she was a year or two older than that.
She is very mature.
All right. And then we have next.
Anna is 10.
Anna, 10.
And Sarah Beth is 8. And Graham just turned 6.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I just feel like your kids have grown so much in just the last, little bit I've known y'all. I see pictures that you send me sometimes. And it's funny, I get to watch them grow along with the baby that you send pictures of. I know that how you and I met, our families met, is a little unconventional. And I'd love to hear your side of how it was for you guys. So let's start with you telling us how baby number 5 came into your life.
Okay. So I'm very close with my mom and we talk often and she's very close with her mom who's still living in 87, 88 this year.
And dad.
They're both living. Yes. Mm-hmm. And they live in your neck of the woods. And so my mom calls one day last September and said that I had a new cousin that had just been born. And it was kind of a surprise. We didn't know that he was expected. And then 3 days after that, we got another phone call from my mom. And I just happened to have her on speakerphone and Ben was in the room and she said that DHR had taken the baby and they were looking for someone to care for him. And my granny really wanted to have him, but she, they wouldn't let her because she's in a walker and my granddaddy's 92 and just asking if there were any relatives interested in or able to care for him. And so what's funny is that we were on speakerphone and in my heart, I was like, no, no, I'm not ready for this. Like, I'm good. Like,
because you knew that they were going to ask you.
Well, they didn't ask. Like, no, I don't think DHR ever got our phone number or anything, but I mean, my mom wasn't saying, do you want him?
Oh, she wasn't. She was just saying was they just were looking for caring. Someone.
But I know my mom well enough to know, like, she knew that our hearts would be open to this, even if mine wasn't initially. Ben and I had always, like, even when we were dating, talked about orphan care and...
most of our churches.
Yes.
Our church in Montgomery and our church in Birmingham are very foster...
And adoption
friendly, like our home group, just for example, right now with our community group, whatever you would call it, has gosh, I mean, I feel like we have just as many kids that are fostered or adopted as biological.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
So we had great examples from people.
And we've always, like, we've thought about foster care and, like, almost started training a couple times in Montgomery. And then we would...
We'll get pregnant.
Get pregnant. And think, okay, now's not the best time, you know. So for one reason or another, we didn't. But then I'm like, I know there are so many ways that we can care for orphans that don't mean exactly, you know, like opening your home.
Exactly.
And
we thought about respite care, like getting training just to do respite care.
Yes.
Still do that.
I think we might still do that too. Yeah. Cause we have so many friends who are in foster care who need, you know, respite sometimes. But
So that's what that is. Respite is when there is a foster family that maybe has needs somebody else to care for the children. They need to go into a licensed home to be able to do that for an extended time. Yes. So definitely as a foster parent, I'm speaking, just having respite care available is amazing and absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. So that is definitely a big need in foster care.
Yeah.
And we fortunately have not had to look for licensed respite care because we're family members. So it's a little different for us.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe five, but I know you need it.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes it's not just because you need a break, but like if I have to go out of town for work or something like that, and the way our schedules work, we sometimes would need to be able to have that option available because I can't take children with me when it's work related. So yes, I think if you guys ever get to be licensed for respite, that would be amazing. Yeah. I think that'd be awesome. Your mom calls you, it's on speakerphone.
Right.
You're thinking,
okay. So like for months before this, I had been like talking to my friends who have littles and babies. And I'm like, it's just a season. You're going to love big kids. Cause I do. I love my big kids so much. They're so much fun and less tiring and, you know, like self-sufficient. They're fixing themselves breakfast and I'm not changing any diapers and we don't have to carry them on hikes. And, you know, it's just, I've just been like praising big kids to my friends who were just in the trenches of baby and toddler. And, you know, like the day is coming when this, it becomes easier physically, you know, you can sleep through the night. So it's funny, just the timing of like, I'm so thankful for my big kids and, just felt like I was in a really good place that maybe just a really selfish place.
That's okay to say.
And we have been involved in orphan care in other ways. We're teaching this twice a year. We, our church hosts this parenting class for families who are vulnerable. They have either lost to the state or that is like being threatened. And so they're, you know, working through a process of trying to get themselves stable and so, and reunify if they've been separated from their children. And so we're involved in that. And I'm in my heart, I'm like, oh, we're good. We're helping with orphan care. Without me being woken up all through the night and changing baby diapers. Anyway, so it took me a good 24 hours to say yes to the Lord. I really just had to sleep on it. And, Ben, I mentioned that we were on speakerphone because Ben happened to be in the room, which is pretty rare that like I'm on speakerphone with my mom and Ben's in the room. And my heart, I'm saying no. Even though she didn't ask the question, my heart is just screaming like, no. And Ben was literally nodding his head at me and saying like, we can do this. He's mouthing like, we can take a baby. And
but Ben goes to the office.
Right. And in my mind, I knew I'm going to be the one getting up all through the night. And he even told me that night after we got off the phone with my mom, it was like, I will take the night shift every night.
Ben, you really wanted to do this.
He did. And he was like, I will wear this baby to the work. And I'm just like, this is not, you have no idea. Like, that's not going to happen.
I just had a little baby fever.
He did have baby fever. And
so what was that night? You said it took you about 24 hours. What were you thinking in that 24 hours? What did that look like for you, your thoughts?
For me, I had this memory that kept coming back to me of every time. So we have some really close friends who have asked us to be their children's guardian, you know, like if something happened to both parents where they, you know, write it on their life insurance or whatever, like in their draw up in their little wills, something happened to us that we would take their children. And that's happened to us a couple of times, maybe two or three times that people have asked us. They don't ask us anymore because we have too many children. But when we just had like one or two, our really close friends would ask us this. And our answer, like we would go home and talk about it and then go get back with them because it's a big decision. But our answer for both of us, like without even, like we both had the same thought that, of course, like if we know of an orphan that we already know and love and care for, how could we turn them away? You know,
right.
Like that would just be so obvious. Just a very obvious way to care for the orphans that is to care for the ones that we know, you know, much less the ones we don't know. So just those little conversations came back to me, memories of that is our heart is if the Lord were to like make something so clear as to make an orphan out of a child that we already know, that just the answer is obvious. You don't have to think about it, you know?
Right. So, yes, for sure. Were your concerns? Just the no was like, my babies are sleeping through the night. I'm going to be tired. I'm going to be limited with what I can do. What was where you were saying no? Was it just that?
Well, part of it was we weren't really saying no to him. For me, it was just apprehension about entanglement with birth parents and drama potentially. You know, especially with a family member, that I'm a no conflict avoidant type person, and which makes a great personality for a lawyer, right? And yeah, exactly. So
we'll settle this one out of court, Judge.
that's where my mind went.
Yeah, my mind didn't go there. Mine was just purely selfish. Like I don't want to get up in the night and. You know, I like the freedom of big kids, you know,
Interesting though, Ben, that you mentioned that with the family, because, I would think that would be a huge reason for a lot of families in your situation when you have this come up. That would be a huge factor in what is this going to look like for our family. For us to get involved, because just to be honest, relationships are messy, you know, because we're all people and we all are broken in a lot of ways. Our filters are all different. And within family, it's not something you can just cut out of your life in a lot of ways. And so interesting that you bring that up, because I think that would be probably one of my thoughts. Like, what is this going to look like within the rest of the family? And how's it going to affect our relationship with these other family members? Did you have any thoughts about how it might affect the kids?
Yes.
Yes. And we did before I called DHR. It was a Wednesday night that my mom called me. And then I slept on it a whole night and thought about it the next day. And then by Thursday night, I was like, okay, Lord. Yes, Lord. You know? So I like found the phone number for DHR and went ahead and pulled it up. And so the next morning I sat down with all of the children and talked to them about it and kind of.
Meanwhile, I do want to interject this.
Okay.
I was just thinking, I don't want to forget to say this.
Okay.
Meanwhile, he has had a hearing and has been placed in foster care because we were a day late.
Well, actually.
So we wouldn't know you if we hadn't delayed.
Right. Right.
True. So
I talked to the children and they were all like, well, two of them were really, really, really like, yes, yes, yes.
I'm going to guess, let's see, Mary and Anna.
Yes. And then Sarah Beth was a little bit more hesitant, but warmed up to the idea. And Graham, I don't think he really understood what was happening, but he loves his little brother now. So
yes, he does.
Yes,
he does.
Yes. But while I was talking to the kids, I mean, everybody at DHR was getting ready to go to court. And when I called DHR and asked for the contact person the only person that I had information for, they said she was out of the office and to leave a message. And so I did. And then I didn't hear back that day. I think I called again in the afternoon and left another message. And
was this on Thursday or Friday?
That was on Friday. But you guys were, I mean, they were having the shelter care hearing that morning for him to be placed in the state's care. And so if I hadn't said no for 24 hours, I think I'm pretty sure he would have just been placed in our care. He could have come home from the NICU to be with us. But looking back, I know God's providence was for you to be a part of his story and my story too. So
you're saying when you got that phone call on Wednesday, if you hadn't delayed,
right,
that little D at your house with you,
he would have been. Yep.
Yeah.
In September, we would have had a baby.
You would have had a brand new baby.
I was really just living in regret all of the end of September and all of October and all of November. Like, my heart was just broken that I said no and that he wasn't with us, you know. But knowing that he was with you, I knew that he was in right where he needed to be. You know, it's kind of weird. You have two feelings about things, you know, like I was so sad, but yeah, comforted. Like, I knew he was in the best place. But looking back, I have less regret, you know, because I know you had the worst of the, sleepless nights.
So,
just kidding.
It's okay. I took one for the team.
You did. Really, I'm just like, I know the Lord, it was a part of his perfect plan for his life and for mine, to intersect with you guys. And
yeah. So I got a phone call on a Wednesday. We have a baby that we are transferring to Birmingham to the NICU. And we are needing to know if he could possibly come into your care. Absolutely, without a doubt, our answer is yes. We've always told the Lord, you know the children. We just let the Lord handpick the children that come into our home. Our criteria, when they say what age, male, female, we just said any. Because we just are just going to trust God with every phone call. If we get the phone call, then our answer is yes. And so, Lord, you know the children that you have ordained to be in our home. So the phone call comes. It's our first newborn that we've fostered. And the phone call comes and it's a yes. And what do we need to do next? And they're like, well, let's get with the hospital. Not sure when he's going to be discharged. So that was on a Wednesday. We went ahead and started gathering the things we were going to need to be able to bring him home. And I did not tell my children right away, because sometimes what happens is we would get the call, we say yes, and then they do find a suitable family. We've had this happen a couple of times where we start preparing and then they find a family member. And then my children are devastated because they're
ready for a baby.
Yes. We had that happen over Christmas, and we were prepared and excited. And then they found a grandmother, which is amazing, which is what we want to happen. Yes, for them to be able to go to a family. So we kind of selfishly grieve that loss on our end for children we never even met because our hearts were so ready to meet them.
Right.
But we are so happy when there is a family that is able to take them. So I've learned when I get these phone calls from DHR, not to tell my children right away.
Right.
Until I'm either picking them up and bringing them home, just to kind of not completely devastate them. And my children are grown. I need to, for people that might not know my family listening, I have grown children. I have a daughter that's married, that lives in another state. I have a son in college, and I have a 17-year-old. So I'm not talking about small children like you have. I'm talking about grownups that are devastated that we're not bringing a baby home. So I got the phone call on a Wednesday, and we started gathering things. And on Friday is when I went down to meet him for the first time at the NICU. And that was when I told my family about it. And went down and met him for the first time. And I walked into the NICU. And I don't know that I've ever even told you this story.
No, I don't think I've heard it.
So I go in. And of course, there's all kinds of security. We're also in pandemic and all the restrictions with hospitals. And I go in to his little room, and there's nobody in the room. And he is laying in this little tiny little rocker baby thing. And he was so little. He was so tiny, just laying and hooked up to all these little monitors. And I was probably in there with him about 15 minutes before a nurse came in. And I was just looking at him, and he was just so... And I don't even know him, you know, like he's not even my child, but it was like, I just felt the love of God for him in that moment. And it's like, oh, Jesus, you have this baby that you have brought into the world for such a time as this, like this little child, you know, like, who is he that you would come in and rescue him and bring him here and allow us to love him. And it was just this moment. Like, I didn't even touch him. I didn't hold him or anything. I was just sitting there looking at him and just knew, I was like, God, there's something really special about this baby. I didn't know anything about him. I didn't know his name. I didn't know his story. Like, I didn't even know the fullness of why he was coming into care, because sometimes we don't know those things right off. Those are things we learn as we go through this process. But you know, just sitting in that room, and of course they have all the lights dim, it's, you know, just quiet, there's some little music playing in the background, and that was the first time I got to meet the little man. And that, I have a video that I took of him the first day that I held him. And that's the video that I have sent you before.
Yes. Where he was smiling. I love that video. I think he's special. My other babies did not smile at all until they're like 5 or 6 weeks old. So the fact that he's smiling, and he was 3 days old or four?
Yes.
3 days?
Three days old.
Four. 5 days.
No, let's see. That was the night.
He was born
the
11th. On a Sunday.
Yeah. So that was 5 days old. He was so five days old.
5 days old. Yeah. See, that's special. He is special.
He is. And that number five, because he's baby number five, and he was five days old. And when I first got to meet him, I didn't even think about that. He was 5 days old when I met him. And I just remember looking at him and talking to him, and he's hooked up to, you know, like, because of the NICU, even monitors and all of this stuff and a little IV. And I'm sitting here talking to him, and he's like responding and smiling. And I thought, oh, what on earth? He stole my heart that day. And now, we didn't take him home from the hospital for 10 days. So I drove down every day and tried to spend...
Oh, goodness, every day?
I did.
That's so precious.
I drove every day. It's about an hour and a half one way, and spent every day, 6-7 hours a day down there with him, holding him, talking to him. And those 10 days of just going down and loving on him and then bringing him home from the hospital. And even 10 days later, bringing him home, just T90, like a little tiny little thing in that massive car seat, and driving home with him. And he was just so loved and celebrated when we brought him home. And I think it was not long, maybe a couple of days after that, that his caseworker told me about you and Ben. And it was this bittersweet kind of, she said, we have found there is a cousin of the babies that is petitioning custody. And normally when I hear those words that there's a family member petitioning custody, the mama bear in me of all the kids is always like, well, okay, let's see how this goes. It's kind of like, it's not a, oh, yay, that's awesome, because I don't know these people.
Right. You're very protective already. I would be too. I can only imagine.
Yes. Yeah. And our heart is always to see children reunited back with families. So we are in it for that.
Right.
But there's always
number
this.
One has got to be the welfare of the child, right?
Absolutely.
So like, that's, I can feel that.
Yes. So it was, I was like, we'll see if this family's good enough for this,
right.
For this baby. Well, she started reading me parts of your petition and the reasons why you guys wanted to have in your life. And when she started reading this email, it was like, in my spirit, I said, yes. I was like, yes, yes, yes. This is the family. This, yes, he belongs to them. I always knew from the moment that she sent that email. And I was like, yes. I said, yes, this, yes, let's do this. And, but of course, with things like this, it's never a quick, like, okay, well, let's do this.
Right.
There's a process. So when you sent that petition in, did you type that up, Tara? Was that all you? Or was that you and Ben together?
Ben's
the most amazing email I've ever read in my life.
Okay, so Ben filed the legal document for the court. I typed up, I have like this really old blog that has like two posts on it, like some recipes from, you know, 2005 or something. But I like got back on that blog and I typed up for myself, just why are we doing this? So I don't know if that's what you read. Is that what the
I think that might have been what I read. So tell me some of the whys. Why did you and Ben? What was the reason for saying yes to that?
I feel like I need to go back and read it. It's been so long. Number one, I think I said, because we're Christians and this is what Jesus calls us to, is to care for orphans. Like he makes that so clear that that is his will for believers. I think I had 3 points. One of them was that we are Christians. One is,
we wanted him to know his, biological grandparents and be part of his biological family.
Right. I knew my grandparents were already grieving, just that they had a grandson born that they couldn't care for, you know, and that they were potentially, like, if he stayed in state's care, they might not know him the way that they could if he was with a family member. So like part of it was love for my grandparent.
Yes. I tell you what's so funny is I've met your grandfather. And you're is he 92?
He is 92.
He is 92.
Grandpa's 92. Yeah. I've met your grandpa and your 92-year-old grandpa and this newborn baby
I know.
Look like they could be twins.
They could be twins.
I call that baby Rayford all the time.
Yeah. Ben takes him and like walks by a mirror and he's like, oh, did you see Rayford? Because that's my granddaddy's name. Look, there's Rayford. Say hi to Rayford.
It's so uncanny how much they look alike. It's so funny.
Yep.
When was that court date that I first met you? Do you remember? I didn't pull my notes up.
I think it was October 27th. I know the day. We were
waiting for it forever.
Oh, we waited so long for that day.
And
yeah. It was a big day.
So, baby came into care with me September 9th was when I first got the call. So on that Friday, the 11th, was when I first met him. Mm-hmm. Brought him home on September 19th.
Mm-hmm.
And then October 27th was our first court date and where I got to meet you guys.
Yes.
What do you remember about coming to court? You remember the date?
Yes.
Were you nervous?
Yes, I was nervous. I don't know why.
We were a little naive, I know, about expectations. Some people had told us, you know, be ready for anything. You might go home with him today. You know, other people, we have, you know, several friends that have been involved in foster care situations. And their advice was just like, you know, don't expect anything in particular. just go.
Right.
You know, show up. And so we were, I guess, for the first time that day, a little bit taken aback by the slowness of the system, not actually Hamilton County.
Marion County.
Sorry about that. Marion County was really on it, but Jefferson County, where we live, which has a much larger population, was not. They had done nothing for the placement with us, and we had not been home studied or interviewed by a caseworker here that would have jurisdiction to make that recommendation back to the court in Marion County. And so, yeah, and I don't know, we got to spend some good time with the guardian ad litem that day. I remember being really encouraged.
Which I had already met her. She came
by her
to the house, and I just loved her so much.
Yes.
She's so sweet.
What was really sad was how, like, I mean, and you kind of talked about us too, like we're some special family or whatever, but we don't see ourselves like out of the ordinary. And I guess what she was just used to seeing is just really broken situations where, you know, the family member that was interested was also potentially unfit as well. And part of the problem. And
yes.
So it was like, she was so refreshed, I guess, to meet, you know, a family that she felt good about. And, you know, she was so excited about things that to us are just very ordinary.
She saw that I had like crayons and artwork, like that I give my kids paper and crayons. And she was stoked about this. And I just, I could not, like later I was like, it was heartbreaking to me that giving my children art supplies is like a really extraordinary thing, you know?
Yeah.
I don't
know. This is why I said when I hear a family member has petitioned custody, I'm always like, okay, well,
right.
Well, we'll wait and see. Right. And so you are an exception sometimes to that. It is unusual to see something like that, believe it or not. Yeah. So
I was going to say, I've learned over the process just how, I don't really like this word, but we are privileged. Like, I know people in the foster care world, and we have connections with like children's services. Like Lifeline is a big agency here in Birmingham. And we have friends in the, like, you know, that are like executives, a part of that. So like after that October 27th court hearing, where we're still waiting on a home study so that we can be like, kick the ball along the process to like get custody of him. I was like, okay, I'm going to make some phone calls now. Cause I hadn't before then. I was just waiting, like expecting things are going to happen. I don't have to like use connections to like make things happen, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of being patient until that day. And then I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to make phone calls now. And so like, I was able to make some phone calls and get some emails and email like upper people in DHR Jefferson County who who like made their people come and do our home study within a few weeks. It still took a long time, but just thinking like, I don't know, we care so much for this little guy. And we want him, you know, like we, and just thinking about all the children who don't have an advocate, like, I don't know, that was, and they're just stuck in these systems that are broken and that are inefficient and, you know, and they don't have like family wanting them, you know, and like, I don't know, it just, it broke my heart. And truly, like, how special this little guy is. That people want him, you know?
And yes.
I don't know. Just random
that thoughts was, I've had. That to- was actually the first day that you got to meet him. Yes. Too, October 27th at court. So yeah. After court, you got to go to our local DHR in Marion County, and I brought him up there for you to see him. What was that like?
So sweet. Yeah.
Did you cry?
Pretty sure I teared up. Yeah.
I mean, because after all the waiting and yes. somebody, and you really wanted him now.
Yeah.
I would imagine maybe not saying hello, but maybe saying goodbye that day was hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was so sweet. My grandparents came to court that day just because they care, you know, and, yes. And they can come. And so they came and they were able to meet him too. That and that was
special.
That was so special. Cause they, I feel like their hearts were bigger for him at that point than ours were even, you know, just not that ours.
Well, it's more of a near relation.
Yeah. They're his grandparents, and just knowing, you know, how the start of his life was so precarious, and
yeah,
it was, that was the most special thing to me, was getting, watching them meet him and hold him and love him, and then meeting you, and
that helped a lot.
It did.
Yeah, did it?
It certainly did.
Just, we're like, it's okay if she takes him home.
Yes. And really, I mean, I remember having the thought, like, okay, Lord, if it isn't your will for him to be with us, like, let him be with her forever. Oh. Because I trust her. Like, and I remember you know, the caseworker was bragging on you and how wonderful of foster mama that you are, and how you have said yes to every baby or child and every phone call, and just bragging on you. And you say, you said, well, I just do this because I love Jesus. And I'm like, we do that too. Like, that's why we're doing this too. So I knew right then. I mean, I kind of had a feeling in our earlier conversations that you knew Jesus too. But
yeah,
when you said that, I was like, okay, he is going to be just fine in the house, you know?
Yes. So, who held him more that day? Did Ben baby hog that day holding him, or did he share with you?
I don't remember.
I think my granny. Yeah.
It's a little hard.
Yeah.
To get
him
in her arms.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Sweet. Well, that was October 27th, and we still had a couple more, well, another like 6 weeks to go before he mm-hmm. came home with you. What was that like? Because we knew you were going to be suitable. We just needed to get all the legalities done. Right. And that process seemed excruciatingly long, didn't it?
It is still going. Yes.
Oh, yes, actually.
Yes. So he came home with us on December 3rd. But, okay, so our caseworker told us that day that we could probably do like a day visit with him soon. And so I emailed her probably the next couple of days and was like, hey, can we maybe do a day visit on Saturday? So she said we could pick him up and take him to Haleville, which is nearby, and visit with my family. And so we did get to see him. I think it was the next Saturday.
Yeah, it was right next week. Yeah.
And then the weekend after that, I think we had our weekend visit. Because it was like November 12th, 13th, 14th, I think, mm-hmm. is when we got to take him for the whole weekend and brought him to our house. And which was, I think it was a lot. I didn't have to share him with my grandparents that over that weekend, you know? So I feel like we bonded more that weekend than.
Yes.
And of course I got to be up with him in the night and have that special bonding time.
Yes. Too.
So those visits definitely helped, you know, in the waiting process of just getting to be with him. And
but you knew in your heart that the yes was getting bigger and bigger. Like,
yes.
You knew that this was it. Yeah. Who's your village that you have around you? You said that you already have some friends in foster care. Did your close friends know what was going on? What kind of info were you sharing with your community?
Yeah, I think as soon as we petitioned the court in September, we didn't like put it on social media or anything. We still haven't. But I mean, everybody in our, you know, daily, weekly rhythms of life. So church family, my office, Tara's homeschool, co-op network, our neighbors, you know, our parents, mm-hmm. Tara's brother, we're all in the loop. And,
and all very supportive and not surprised.
Okay.
I'd forgotten, I guess, that we used to talk about like foster care more before we got busy with big kids and stuff.
I didn't even know that. That's yeah. Awesome.
But yeah.
God remembered.
Yes. And my family. I just remember my mom being like, I'm not surprised you said yes. I knew you would.
One of my favorite things I remember was you. I remember if you told me or if you sent me pictures of one of the times that you took him home for a visit and all the neighbor kids were all lined up to meet him when yes. you pulled up in the driveway. They were just excited yes. that you brought him home as you were.
We do homeschool a co-op one day a week. And the first time he came with us there, it was like a crowd rushed out to the car. He's a celebrity. He really
he is.
he's the only baby.
Never seen a baby more loved and celebrated.
Me neither. And I just love it. And you know how when you have like your bio kids, I have to like tamper down my like pride in them because I'm like, I don't want to like brag about my kids too much, you know, but for him, I don't have that. Like, there's nothing restraining me from bragging about him, right? Like, I can't take credit for him and his, you know, as if I could take credit for my bio kids anyways. It's all, anything good is from the Lord, but yes. You do have to like tamper down your pride a little bit about your children, you know, but yes. For him, I just brag about him all the time. I don't feel bad about it.
And you shouldn't. We had a community here as well that loved him, our church family, our small group. We do small groups because it was pandemic. Churches mm-hmm. weren't meeting regularly a lot. And we were doing small groups with church at our home. So we would have people come into our home every week for church. And he got so loved and passed mm-hmm. around and snuggled, just absolutely spoiled here. I would take him to work with me when I worked. He, in fact, one of my coworkers who is, his wife is expecting a baby any day. We were talking about him bringing his baby to the office on occasion.
Aww.
And he said, if only he is going to be as quiet as your baby, because aww. Your baby never cried. And it's so true. He would go to the office and he would just sit with me and sing and play. He was the best uh-huh. baby for me at the office. He would just sit there and rock. I'd put him in a sling and wear him when I was working. And so when I occasionally get little updates from you and new photos, I like a proud mama pull him out and have to show everybody too. Like, yes. Look at how big he's getting. So I did that this week at the office, and like, look at how big. And they're like, oh my gosh, he's so beautiful. Look at how big he is. Look how smart he is. He's clapping. And so he has a fan club that's still so here in Hamilton, Alabama, that ask about him, that are cheering for him, and that are celebrating this happy ending to his story, you know, with him being a family with you. So I just couldn't be happier for him, and so thankful that you're still sharing him with us.
Oh, we could not share with you and let you celebrate and praise the Lord for his life and all his milestones. And I mean, your family now, you know, you're his family forever and our family too. So
thank you for sharing him with us. So what is next for him? Is that anything we can talk about? So he is transitioning into your custody, like you have custody of him now. What does that look like legally?
Well, we still are just a placement family.
Like relative placement.
We are a relative placement.
Okay.
Any legal custody rights other than just physical. But we've waited. His is kind of a unique story. He wasn't born in a hospital. And there was a long wait for a birth certificate, which I will spare all the listeners. that tied up, you know, getting a social security card and getting his hospital bills paid. And
which was part of the delay in getting him home with you was we were waiting on that birth certificate.
Right. We waited for a paternity test. We waited for a birth certificate. We waited for a lot. So, I don't know what's next. Actually, we're hopeful that in the next couple of weeks, we may get an order with, you know, full legal custody. It would be called temporary custody. But when we were in court in October, the judge told us the word temporary in this situation could mean forever. So we, I guess, have to make a choice at some point about whether or not to, this is not something that I'm excited about doing, but terminating parental rights and asking, you know, the court to basically allow us to adopt him after that point. And so,
and Ben's just not excited about that because of his,
it's not
his anti-conflict nature.
Yeah.
Right.
Is why he struggles with the idea of that.
Well, I mean, and we are advocates for family reunification. We like to believe in birth parents, and because a lot of times we've met people that just nobody has ever believed in them, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And this is a different situation. I don't have really much hope at all that there's going to be reunification, but,
yes. Well, I am, so grateful that even under the circumstances that God allowed our paths to cross, and as selfish as it is that we got to love him those 3 months.
No, not selfish. You laid down your life to love him.
And my sleep. I don't know.
He would never have had a baby book if he had come here in September. You totally gave him that. I think that all the time. Like every, you know, every child we add, there are fewer pictures of them and preserved memories. And so he's very lucky. Like he got that, you know, royal treatment the first 3 months.
No.
Yeah.
He did.
I take more pictures of him than I did the others. maybe not baby number one, but
we've never printed a picture and put it in a book.
No.
People don't do that these days, do they?
No.
Well, I, that digital album that we share, I really probably just need to go and upload a whole bunch of pictures of him for you guys. So you'll have them digitally as well. Cause we probably have 1,000 pictures.
Send them all. I would love that.
I will. I'm going to do that. Actually, I'll do that today when we hang up. So send that. So, well, anything else you want to add or that you feel like would be important to include that people should hear or know?
I'm sure you talk about it on your podcast, but I guess I'm really interested in your family dynamic and your kids, both biological and foster. Like, you know, what's the relationship and how do they? Because you haven't been doing this forever, right? Like, this is like about a year of foster care.
Right, not even a year yet.
Yeah. So, how have they transitioned and adjusted? And I don't know. I just want to hear about you, but you don't sure. have to necessarily record if you've done it before.
Yeah. Well, so my children are grown, but it was a decision when we started this process that we made together as a family, because I believe that God puts these children in families, not just gives them a mother or a father, but a family, a community of, you know, a tribe, a village, and that's going to be necessary for their healing, for their just their well-being. It takes the village for us. And we wanted to make sure all of our family and our extended family, but primarily my kids, to be on board with this. And they were. And not just in saying yes to let's do it, but their personal involvement in every mm-hmm. child that we've had in our home. And even though I have two kids that don't even live at home anymore, we get daily FaceTime calls. And we actually, your baby ends up in our family group message at least once a week. Everybody has their own pictures that they've taken of him over time, and he is our favorite. They constantly share aww. Photos, like they're scrolling through their phone looking for something, and they're like, oh, I just saw this photo of him, and they'll send this photo or this video or something of him, and they do that with all of our children. We've had 14 come through our home in the last 10 months, I guess. Four wow. have been respite care, and 10 have been that have stayed with us for a certain amount of time. Mm. We've had as many as five children in care here in our home. And I couldn't have done it without my children. And we cry every time one leaves, you know, we do get attached, and I feel like we feel God's heart for all of these kids. Mm-hmm. And we have their pictures up on our fridge of every child that's come through our home. And, we pray for them mm-hmm. and know that though we may never hear, from any of them again, we know that we were ordained to be a part of their life for that season, and that what we deposited and invested and what they invested in us, because wow, we receive so much from these children ourselves.
Yes.
That we know that it just is eternal. It just lives on. Mm. And that even though those kids may not remember us, even though little man may not ever, he'll never remember his first
He's
3 months.
He's going to know y'all.
But, you know, just to be honest, he is the only one of all the kids we've had in care that we've stayed in touch with. And that aww. it's really one of my favorite things is that we get to see him. We're watching him grow up and learn new things. And that, oh, I can't even tell you what that does to our hearts to get to be a part of watching him grow. And I wish I had this type of relationship with all of the families. But unfortunately for a lot of people, foster care or the thought that one of your family members or that DHR has been involved in the family in some way can be maybe embarrassing and shameful for a lot of families. And I think when they get to close that chapter in that season, and, you know, a child is with a family member, they kind of just want to close that. Like, we just really don't want to talk about that difficult time in our life when this happened. and they kind of tend to move on.
Right. And I think we need a family reunion where maybe on a regular basis, we need to get together with y'all.
I'm down. I'm down. Shoot me a text. Let's do it.
Well, I made it through this conversation without completely breaking down in tears. Thank you, Jesus. I love that Ben and Tara have allowed us to be a part of their family and keep us updated on the little man that changed my world in September 2020. He is now the chunkiest little guy with the best laugh, learning to crawl and clap. I told my kids this week that he's probably gotten so chunky because the part of my heart he took with him is still growing big inside of him. I love that baby. Friend, I hope you've enjoyed the conversation so far this month. If you haven't had a chance to listen to the others, I hope you can put that on your list to do this month. With over 400,000 kids in foster care in the United States, it's going to take a village. Whether that is opening up your home, providing respite, being a mentor, or donating resources, you can make a difference. If you would like to learn more about how you can get involved in foster care, feel free to message me or contact your local DHR to see how you can get involved in your community. Friend, we'll be here again next week. I'll save you a seat as we sit around the table, have a cup of coffee, and talk about what's next, God?